year, our nation has seen a wave of anti-LGBTQ bills. More than 525 have been introduced in 41 states, many of them specifically targeting our transgender youth. Some bills seek to ban gender-affirming care, while others are designed to dictate what sports kids can play or what bathrooms they can use.
This is Senator Dick Durbin in a hearing, I guess, it really wasn't that, that the Senate held, I think Judiciary Committee, if I remember correctly, that they held last week, and it was very interesting. We'd already played some of the clips between John Kennedy and one of the interviewees about, you know, whether women have any natural advantage in sports. I think she was definitively shown to be wrong by Riley Gaines, the swimmer who was in this this hearing. Very, very interesting stuff. I finally got around to listening to all of it, about 2.5 hours. You know, that's what I do. I just sit around and listen to these hearings. First of all, you know what struck me about this? It had never quite struck me before, is that the categorization of laws and or sentiments or actions as being anti-LGBTQ, that's a weird category. And the reason I say that is because the various things that those letters stand for are not all the same in terms of sort of philosophically what they represent. You know, for example, L and G, right? You know, homosexual, right? Male, male, or female, female. They're very different from, for example, T. Even B, like bisexual, is still very different from T for trans, right? And when they say that they're these anti-LGBTQ bills or anti-LGBT or pick your initials that they're going to use, the point is, a bill that is, for example, let's say anti-gay, okay, there aren't all that many bills like this, but let's say that you had a bill that tried to say that marriage is between a man and a woman only. Okay, they would classify that as an anti-LG bill, right? That's not the same as being anti-trans, right? A bill that, or categorized as such, like a bill that says that, you know, people who are born with male anatomy ought to use the men's bathroom, for example. That's an anti-trans bill. And If you happen to have a bill that was anti-T, again, I'm using their language, that's not the same as being anti-LG or B. And the only reason I bring this up is because there's a fairly, I would say at this point in American cultural history, a fairly well-established idea that being anti-gay is somehow wrong or regressive or repressive or inappropriate or in some cases even illegal, right? Because you have anti-discrimination statutes that have been passed in order to protect homosexual either behavior or orientation or both, okay? And because that's well established, the tactic sort of philosophically of the people who are in favor of expanding transgender presence, acceptance, and legal protection in our society have, I think, very smartly but very inappropriately taken the approach of, well, anything against one letter of the acronym string is against all of the letters of the acronym string. But it's not the same. Bills that are bills that express a frustration or an intolerance towards, you know, people going through transition using the different bathroom, or, you know, men competing in women's sports because they've gone through a transition or say they have, that's not the same as saying that, you know, men should only marry men or that two women should not be able to adopt a child. Those are different categories. But it's smart, if you're pushing trans activism, to try to categorize bathroom bills, sports bills, pronoun bills, as if they are in the same category as being anti-gay. Because, again, Americans have generally accepted the proposition that, you know, even if you don't particularly personally like it, gayness is okay, it's protected, it's good, you shouldn't talk about it. And so they want to borrow on the cultural power of the pro-gay sentiment in criticizing bills that are anti-trans. And it's just, it's interesting how they slop these things together. And, I mean, you know, there's distinctions between all of these things. Like, for example, people often talk about being born gay. Right. And, you know, we've talked about this, you know, whether it is something you're born with, something that is developed over time, something that can or cannot be changed. I think it's silly to talk about it as something that's purely chosen, as if somebody wakes up on a Thursday and decides they're going to like men instead of liking women. I mean, that's silly. And because it's silly, that's the alternative to that is not something that anybody really advocates. But anyway, but trans is not like that. I mean, you cannot say that somebody is born trans. The whole point of being trans is that you weren't born with the gender that you identify with, and you then try to, you know, intercede bodily or hormonally in a way to try to change very dramatically what you were born as. And so they're, again, they're all lumped together largely because they are against sort of traditional morality or traditional beliefs about gender, and also because there's a sense in which as being outcasts or disfavored or marginalized, there's a solidarity among all of the different groups that the letters represent. But they are very different things. And so it's just, again, I'm a philosopher, so sloppy categories make me uncomfortable, and all of these are not in the same category. Moving on. Dick Durbin continues, Senator from Illinois. Oh, they watched a video of a dad who, you know, said that it was really hard for him to accept that his, I think, born son became daughter, I think is who he was talking about. But in any case, you know, kind of a emotionally moving testimony about how laws that protect people like his child are important and laws that punish or discourage or disfavor people like his child are very evil and ought to be changed.
You saw the video of the Missouri father. Does he sound like a radical who is trying, anxious to experiment with his child's future? Not to me. He sounds like a father who resisted acknowledging the real condition of his child until he realized he was wrong. I'm sure it was a painful, labored process and journey, but he is convinced he did the right thing for his transgender daughter.
There you go. Transgender daughter, born a male, identified as a female, and then transitioned. Interesting note. And by the way, this is something that I think people who are more against the acceptance of transgender individuals will often neglect to mention, but it's got to be awful. I mean, it's got to be awful to feel like you're in the wrong body. It's got to be awful to watch your child feel like they're in the wrong body. You know, whether you categorize that as a legitimate, you know, malorientation towards the body that therefore ought to be changed, or whether you view that as some kind of a, you know, mental incapacity or disorder, gender dysphoria, that's not the point. All I'm saying is it's got to be horrible to be the person experiencing it, and it's got to be horrible to be the parent of somebody experiencing that. And so the pain that you hear him talk about, that's real. And sometimes I think people who want to pass the, you know, bathroom bills to restrict or sports bills to restrict don't do enough of a job of acknowledging the reality of the pain. You can acknowledge that somebody is suffering or uncomfortable or in anguish without then endorsing the solution that they're wanting, but you should acknowledge the reality of the pain, because I'm sure it is. And absolutely, I do believe that parents who want their children to undergo a transition because that's what their children seem to want, and or because medical experts tell them that's what is good for them, I am sure those parents want what is best for their children and are convinced this is it and want to eliminate or reduce the suffering that their children are experiencing. That's, you know, you should, one of the key things in any sort of social cultural debate, always find the stuff that you should admit because it's right. We get in the habit of, I disagree with this person over this idea, therefore everything they say I'm going to fight against. Everything they say I'm going to disagree with. And that really undermines your credibility. Always acknowledge that when people disagree with you, if they say something that's right, acknowledge the part that's right. At least that's common ground you can agree about. Everybody, I think, should be able to agree that it's awful and painful and difficult to live in a body that you feel is the wrong one. I mean, that's not even controversial, right? That experience has to be terrible.
Regulating the age when a young person can buy a tattoo or drive a car is one thing, but making a decision that fundamental that could affect the life of an individual should be viewed differently.
See, this is an interesting one because, of course, the sort of snarky commentary you see on social media is often, you know, they aren't allowed to decide whether to eat vegetables or not. They're not allowed to decide what bedtime to go. They're not allowed to get a tattoo. They're not allowed to drink alcohol. They're not allowed to drive a car. And yet you're going to allow them to decide major life-shaping decisions about the direction and trajectory of their bodily development and whether they ever are able to naturally have children or not. That's insane. Well, Durbin is addressing that. He doesn't give an argument for why, you know, gender change is something that kids should be allowed to choose when they're not allowed to choose permanent body markings or driving cars. So I would say he's recognizing the challenge. Of course, I would think that that argues against the allowance of minors being able to make these decisions. Continuing on now, Lindsey Graham, and these are just the opening remarks. I'm going to spend a lot of time with this today because there was so much. This is probably the least interesting of it, but it's the way the stage was set And also, these issues come up, and knowing how to talk about them and being willing to talk about them sort of rationally and logically is just not something we see an awful lot of in our discussions these days. Lindsey Graham.
You'll never convince me that a biological male who swam 3 years on the men's team and transitioned for the senior year, that was fair.
That's the Leah Thomas case. You know, Will Thomas for 3 years swam as a man and then transitioned to a female and then did incredibly well as a female, right? Even winning one national championship, competing against the females. That's the one that Riley Gaines swam against and tied with in a different event. It was, I think, the 500 that Leah won in, and the 200, I think, tied with Riley Gaines. So the idea that anybody could be 3 years competing as a male athlete and then with basically no real fundamental biological change, say I'm a woman, change in the women's bathroom, by the way, with no warning to the other athletes, and then just be treated as a woman, he's never going to be persuaded of that. I am also, I don't think, ever going to be persuaded by that. I wouldn't say never, because you never know how your ideas change. But at this moment, I'm definitely not persuaded that that's a fair way to have women compete.
One of the questions is it okay for a state to ban transitions of a minor? And I think it is. I think the state has every interest in protecting minor children and regarding a medical procedure that is life-altering, given the evidence we have about how these procedures work.
And again, that's the question about minors. You know, it's a different thing to say adults who have already gone through puberty, but for minors who have not yet gone through puberty and to shape their hormonal future and therefore their bodily development trajectory in a permanent way that is essentially irreversible because of the developmental changes that happen in puberty, he says, yeah, that's why we're against this. No parent should be allowing this for their child, period, end of story. Last one, and I'll just kind of leave you with this one. This is Harley Walker. Harley Walker is a young, born male, transitioned to female person giving testimony and, you know, very passionate opening statement, several subsequent statements as well. I just want you to hear this one because it's a perspective that you don't hear very often, and I'm going to let Harley say it for the record.
I want all of you to look at me here now and hear my words. I am a very happy 16-year-old girl. I have wonderful friends who accept me for who I fully am, and I am active in my school's debate team and other curricular activities. I love to travel. I enjoy concerts and music like Taylor Swift and listening to my record collection in my room. I get all A's in school, and I am looking forward to college. I am not miserable in my life. I am not depressed. I'm just trying to be a teenager in America.
Sounds like a pretty well-adjusted, fairly smart, capable, accomplished, you'd be proud of this person if it were your child. And I play that because that's just, I mean, there's nobody who can dispute that's true. She's telling you her experience. And, okay, you should listen to that. Even if you believe that it wasn't right to allow her to transition, even if you believe that she shouldn't be allowed to compete in male sports, even if you believe that she should be using a bathroom that's a, you know, male bathroom. Okay, again, acknowledge the truth of things that people say that can't really feasibly be disputed. Is she happy as a result of all the things that have happened in her life? Well, unless she's just lying, and she doesn't seem to be lying, it's true. So does that mean that these things should be allowed? Open question. Does it mean that her experience is the same experience as thousands of others? Open question. You know, I mean, just be reasonable in these conversations because there's so much unreasonableness in these conversations. 524 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
On March 17th of 2022, my teammates and I, as well as female swimmers from universities around the country, were forced to compete against biological male Leah Thomas. Thomas was allowed to compete in the women's division after competing as a member of the University of Pennsylvania's men's swim team for 3 years as Will Thomas. We watched on the side of the pool as Thomas swam to a national title in the 500 freestyle, beating out the most impressive and accomplished female swimmers in the country, including many Olympians and American record holders, by body lengths. Previously, Thomas had been ranked 462nd at best in the men's division the year prior.
This is Riley Gaines, who was testifying or commenting, I suppose it's technically testimony, at the Senate hearing last week on LGBT issues. And it was very interesting. It was a very interesting hearing. It didn't make a lot of news. I was surprised. I mean, the clip with, you know, Joe Kennedy, or not Joe, I would, Edward Kennedy. Now, what is his first name now? All of a sudden, I can't remember. The Senator Kennedy. I always want to call him by the wrong name. John Kennedy. That's right. I always want to think, well, it can't be John because that was the other John Kennedy, you know. There was some traction, you know, a lot of people, I think, saw the interaction with him asking, you know, about, do men have an advantage over women? And the woman who was testifying saying basically, no, not in all cases, which is incredibly stupid of her to say. But generally, the testimony was very interesting, about 2.5 hours long. Of course, you know me, I listen to it all. This is what I do. But yeah, talking about the interaction between her and, Will for 3 years and then Leah for 1 year. And that's been one of the big sort of well-known stories about men competing in women's sports in the college level. And a lot of the background of this I did not know.
Previously, Thomas had been ranked 462nd at best in the men's division the year prior. The next day, I raced Thomas in the 200 freestyle, which ended up in a tie. We went the exact same time down to the 100th of a second. Having only one trophy, the NCAA handed it to Thomas and told me I had to go home empty-handed. And when I asked why, which was a question they were not prepared to be asked, I actually appreciate their honesty because they said Thomas, it was crucial Thomas had it for picture purposes. Thomas had to have it for the pictures. I felt betrayed. I felt belittled. I felt reduced to a photo op. But my feelings didn't matter. What mattered to the NCAA were the feelings of a biological male.
Because of the issue, right? Because of the thing that they were trying to advance at the NCAA.
In 1972, Congress enacted Title IX to end unjust sex discrimination in all aspects of education, including college athletics. But by allowing Thomas to displace female athletes in the pool and on the podium, the NCAA intentionally and explicitly discriminated on the basis of sex. Although the NCAA claim it acted in the name of inclusion, its policies in fact excluded female athletes, which are the very female athletes whom Title IX was passed to protect.
Yeah, Title IX is the one that says, for example, that if you have a male sport, you have to have a female sport, right? You can't expand male sports without expanding female sports. It provides opportunity for women. It guarantees opportunity for women by segregating women from male sports. That is the key element of that, is that, you know, because women and men are biologically different, you can't fairly provide for women's sports if you allow men to compete in women's sports. That doesn't work. That's why you have to have gender-separated sports, something that the, you know, sort of the gender anarchists that were represented on this panel and in culture want to deny. It's just this most bizarre thing. But, yeah, it is a tremendous inversion to use Title IX to displace women from sports by allowing men, biological men, to compete in. It's unbelievable. But there's another part of this story that I did not know that was genuinely horrifying to hear.
But that is not all. In addition to being forced to give up our awards and our titles and our opportunities, the NCAA forced me and my female swimmers to swim to share a locker room with Thomas, a 6'4", 22-year-old male equipped with and exposing male genitalia.
What in the world? That was the background?
Let me be clear about this. We were not forewarned we would be sharing a locker room. No one asked for our consent, and we did not give our consent. And I'll set the scene. A swimming locker room is not a place of modesty. You're undressing, you're fully exposed, and we were forced to take off our swimsuit in front of a man who was doing the exact same thing. If nothing else, I truly hope how you can see this as a violation of our right to privacy, and how some of us have felt uncomfortable, embarrassed, and even traumatized by this experience.
Look, I'm willing to hear the claims that somehow, and I don't agree with them, but I'm willing to hear the claims that certain kinds of transgender athletes might be able to be accommodated in some sports. I mean, I don't agree, but I'm willing to hear it. But there's nothing you're going to tell me that says that a 6-foot-plus man with all the parts should be allowed to change clothes into swimming gear in a room filled with young women who are also having to change into and out of their swimming. Like, there's no universe in which that's good, acceptable, okay, particularly without warning, without consent, right?
I know that I don't speak for every single person who competed against Leah Thomas, but I know I speak for many because I saw the tears. I saw the tears from the 9th and 17th place finishers who missed out on being named an All-American by one place. And I can attest to the extreme discomfort in the locker room when you, from these 18 to 22-year-old girls, when you turn around and there's male eyes watching in that same room. And I can attest to the whispers and the grumbles of anger and frustration from these girls who, just like myself, had worked our entire lives to get to this meet.
And by the way, not just put into this incredibly violating position, this sexual assault kind of position that would have been a crime any other situation, but then to get harassed and bullied and stifled if they complained about it. We'll tell you that in just a second. Candy's got traffic on the fives.
Good news, we're not showing a slowdown right now. There's an accident, but it looks like just a little congested, not bad. Looks like you can get past it, and certainly plenty of side streets. Palafox, Fairfield, into Har. And again, not showing a roadblock this morning. If you see an accident, or rather have a traffic tip, text it in, 437-1620, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Thanks so much, Candy. Back to the Senate hearing on LGBT issues, which was mostly focused on transgender, and I've said this before, but I'll say it again. I think L, B, and G are, you know, lesbian, gay, and bisexual are one category of thing, whereas of behavior, of identity or orientation, whatever you want to call it, trans is a completely different thing. We should not lump these all together. They are not the same. And just as a like minor aside on that topic, when lesbians, gays, and bisexuals are asking for acceptance for who they are, which they claim is, you know, from birth or from a very early age, they're not asking to become something else. In fact, they're telling you, don't make me become something I'm not. Transgender is the exact opposite. It's not something you're born as. It's something you want to become in spite of what you were born as. And there's a tremendous level of like psychological dissonance in the claim that I just want to be accepted for who I am, when what you actually want is to be turned into something you definitely are not yet. Right, I mean, they should not all be put together. Anyway, I digress. Back to Riley Gaines talking about this at the Senate hearing, talking about how the girls who objected to being forced to share a changing room with a male, how they were treated.
And I can attest to the fact that around the country, these female athletes who opposed the inclusion of Leah Thomas in the women's divisions were threatened, intimidated, and emotionally blackmailed into silence and submission. Defending women's rights is not anti-anyone. Believing in biology is not bigoted. And following the science that there are only two sexes and that there are very real and important differences between the two sexes is not hateful, it's fact.
And by the way, she clarified a little bit later kind of what happened to the girls who didn't want to change in front of Leah Thomas.
Again, we only became aware we would be undressing next to a man was when we had to see a man undressing while we were simultaneously undressing. And so I immediately left the locker room and I went up to one of the officials on the pool deck. And I said, what are the guidelines to allow a man into our locker room? I know the guidelines for the competition, but what are the guidelines for the locker room? And he so nonchalantly said back, oh, we actually got around this by making locker rooms unisex. And so I'm thinking to myself in these brief moments, first and foremost, you just admitted this is a male by acknowledging how you had to change your rules to make the locker rooms unisex. You acknowledge that we do not share the same sex, first and foremost. Secondly, unisex? Any man could have walked into our locker room, any coach, any official, any man who wanted to would have had full reins to, and bare minimum, we weren't forewarned about it.
Again, it's just an unbelievable position for the NCAA to take.
And if we do speak up, you're immediately labeled as some name. They will call you everything under the sun, whether it's transphobic, homophobic, racist, white supremacist, domestic terrorist. They will throw them all at you in hopes to deter you, in hopes to silence you. Leah Thomas's teammates, they were forced every single week to go to mandatory LGBTQ education meetings to learn about how just by being cisgender, they were oppressing Leah Thomas. They were told that they're not allowed to take a stance because their school has already taken their stance for them. They were told that you will never get a job, you will never get into grad school, you will lose your friends, you will lose your scholarship and playing time if you speak out. They told these girls that if you do speak out, and any harm whatsoever comes towards Thomas's way, whether that's through social media, whether that's physical, mental, emotional harm, then you are solely responsible and you could be responsible for a potential death. And you don't want that, do you? Of course not. Who would ever want to be responsible in a potential death? But that is the emotional blackmail that is plaguing this country, especially in universities.
You want to talk about empowering women, allowing women to hold their views, stand up for what you believe in, respect, avoid sexual harassment and assault. And all of that has been thrown out entirely in this context of trying to force women to accept biological males, or maybe you don't like born males, okay, to compete in their sports in these environments, especially like swimming, where in the locker room people are all changing together, where it's just I mean, it's unfathomable to me that this is where we have gotten, even in any slice of our society, let alone as like, no, this is absolutely the right thing. You know, we should be doing this all the time. Now, Mike Lee, Senator Mike Lee, actually asked, you know, did they accommodate you at all when you made these complaints? When people raised these issues, did the NCAA accommodate you?
Tell me what attempts that the NCAA made to accommodate you and other female swimmers who felt uncomfortable sharing an open locker room with a biological male?
Nothing. They actually made us feel guilty for feeling as if we were uncomfortable. Time and time again, that's what we saw. There was even a group of girls who undressed in the janitor's closet. They changed clothes in the janitor's closet because they felt more comfortable undressing in that environment than they did undressing next to someone with male gaze.
And were they doing that because they were transphobic?
They were doing it because they were violated.
See, even if you make the case and believe that Leah Thomas has a right to swim as a woman, okay? You make that case. You have to always be thinking, whenever you're talking about solutions to problems, you're always thinking about, you know, goods and bads, right? Balancing interests. At the very least, you have to acknowledge that you are harming many, many, many women in the interest of accommodating or benefiting Leah Thomas. Just as with other transgender sports competitors, you would be harming either by displacement from competition status or by all the corollary problems that come with treating biological males identifying as females as if they are the same as full-life females. And that's the part I don't hear very much. Because, you know, one approach is to completely deny Leah Thomas any kind of consideration for competing as a woman. And I understand that approach. But even if you grant that Leah Thomas has an interest in, maybe even you say she has some kind of a right to, and I use she very cautiously here, you have to always think, and what are the sacrifices? What are the consequences? What are you doing that harms women in the process? And even if you say that Leah has certain rights, well, do these other women have no rights at all? 623 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Pensacola's 4th of July fireworks over Pensacola Bay start at 9 p.m. and are presented by Pensacola Young Professionals and the Pensacola Chamber. The best spots to watch will be from Bayfront Parkway, Plaza de Luna, or Community Maritime Park for the Symphony. Don't miss the Pensacola Symphony and their free Sparks and Stars performance starting at 7 p.m. presented by Peter Mouget. Bring your radio. The fireworks will be synchronized to the music on Cat Country 98.7 thanks to Peyton Heating and Air. The countdown gets started at 9 live on Cat Country 98.7.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see
in. Made with quality in mind, and your products and installation are.
I am a pediatrician trained in pediatric endocrinology. I have been providing gender affirming care to transgender youth for more than 10 years in Texas. I have also published scientific research that shows that gender affirming care improves the psychological well-being of transgender youth. I am here today to be the voice of my patients and their parents, because in Texas and in other states where bills banning gender-affirming care are being passed, the lives and future of transgender youth are at risk.
So this was at the Senate hearing last week on LGBT issues. I think it was a Judiciary Committee hearing. And given that it was Dick Durbin and Lindsey Graham kind of leading the charge on both sides, that makes sense to me. But this is Dr. Ximena Lopez, as you heard her say, a pediatric endocrinologist who works on in this area particularly, and working with, you know, people with gender dysphoria and giving them what she considers to be good medical care for them in order to affirm their gender identity. These are all things that, you know, I'm not on board with, I'm not in agreement with, but I am a big believer in listen to people who disagree with you. Huge believer in, you've got, if you can only maintain a view that you have that is at odds with what somebody else believes by avoiding listening to them, that's not a good indicator. Like, that's not a good sign, right? If you can only listen to the views expressed by people you agree with, you might want to consider how strong those views really are, if they have to be constantly reinforced. Now, there is a truth also that if all you ever do is consume the views of things you disagree with, that can be dangerous too. But at least be willing to listen. You know, always be willing to listen. That's why I like when Harley Walker, who was another affiant, I suppose, testimony giver at the Senate hearing, who is a young transgender, born a man, becomes a girl, talking about her experiences. Listen, you know, just listen and take them seriously.
I want all of you to look at me here now and hear my words. I am a very happy 16-year-old girl. I have wonderful friends who accept me for who I fully am, and I am active in my school's debate team and other curricular activities. I love to travel. I enjoy concerts and music like Taylor Swift and listening to my record collection in my room. I get all A's in school, and I am looking forward to college. I am not miserable in my life. I am not depressed. I'm just trying to be in a teenager in America.
Now, is Harley representative of all transgender children? I don't think so. But is she an example? You know, I mean, yeah. And, you know, she seems articulate, smart, relatively well-adjusted by all the indicators you could tell. Now, could she be lying? I mean, you know, theoretically anybody could be lying, but I take Harley at her word and I listen because I want to. Now, it doesn't persuade me, okay, to change my view, but you ought to consider it. You know, ought to consider it. That's kind of generally my approach to these things. Dick Durbin, who is a senator from Illinois, a long-serving senator from Illinois, a senator with whom I almost never agree, and I didn't agree with him during this hearing.
It is interesting to me that you cannot put a nominee for the Supreme Court of the United States at that table, and they all sit there, without that person expecting a question as to whether or not they're going to be influenced by foreign laws. Will you look at laws in other countries, or are you going to stick with America? And the answer they're waiting for is, I stick with America. And now we have references to Europe as the standard bearer in terms of where America should go for its future.
What he's getting at there is the argument made by Lindsey Graham, made by Matt Sharp from the Alliance Defending Freedom, the organization that is advocating for many of the laws that have been passed, like here in the state of Florida, Alabama, Texas. Basically, they're saying that in Europe, where they've been ahead of us on this, where they have been doing this for decades already, and now they're backing off. They're not prohibiting it yet, but they're no longer recommending it, and they're basically saying that the evidence isn't conclusive that this is beneficial to transition children or to give them hormone therapy. And so folks like Matt and like Lindsey Graham are saying, hey, pay attention to that example, and maybe we shouldn't be running straight into following the pattern that they're now backing off. And Dick Durbin says, the last time I checked, most of y'all Republicans were kind of against listening to Europe for anything because you believe that America is special. And there's a sense in which he's right, okay? There is a kind of contradiction there between what Republicans have often said and what they're saying today. And there's a sense in which he's wrong because we're not talking about the concept of law or the foundation of rights or something like that. We're instead talking about what does the science say or what does the evidence say? You know, what are we learning? What can be learned from the experience of others as opposed to a purely philosophical proposition?
I love Europe. I love the Europeans, but we're Americans. And when it comes to the decisions as basic as the rights of our individual citizens and freedoms, I think we've got a pretty good starting point with the Constitution and Bill of Rights.
This gives me conniptions to hear him talk like that because it's exactly the opposite of what he would normally be saying. But, you know, hey, take your moment in the sun, young man. Not young at all. 7:15 here on News Radio 92.3. A lot more from this hearing. We've been talking about this all morning, and so I think what I'm probably going to do is compile the segments together into one, you know, if you want to kind of hear everything I've had to say about this today, because it's a very interesting hearing. And one of the things I tell you is when you listen to people who disagree with you and with people who agree with you, unless you're going to discount what's being said, it forces you to really think through what you believe and why you believe it. And is it right? And am I accommodating all the evidence that's known to me or not? And that's something you should always be doing. Now, I haven't changed my view in case some of you are like, Andrew, you sound like you're... No. But if you can't consider all the evidence honestly, fairly, even charitably, then your own position is weak. And I don't like to hold weak positions. I like to hold strong positions. Not because I hold them vehemently, but because they are strong, right? Not because I'm shouting about it, but because the logic and the evidence is actually there to support the view I'm holding. Candy's got traffic on the fives.
Showing an accident on the west side. It is Highway 98 and Sea Pine Circle. Not showing a roadblock, though. Use caution there. Certainly caution wherever you are. 437-1620. If you have traffic tips, you can text them in. Again, 437-1620. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Thanks so much, Candy. Back to the conversation being had at the Senate last week. Now, Harley Walker, that's the young transgender girl that I was talking about. She played her clip earlier. Sometimes people will say a thing that they think favors their view, but maybe gives evidence in the other direction, right? Because maybe they're not interpreting even their own comments in the strongest or the most appropriate possible way. Here's what she said.
Whenever I was about 11 years old, I was doing research on the LGBTQ community, and I came across the term transgender. And growing up as a kid, I always knew that I was different. And so I came to my parents with saying that I think I am transgender.
See, this is a fascinating observation by her, because on the one, and I think anybody, wherever they are on this issue, would have to say very neutrally that coming across the idea of being transgender in research, in a book, and that term psychologically facilitated her embracing the idea of transitioning. It permitted her to entertain that in a whole new way because, oh, I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know that was possible. Here's where it's interesting, because that's the argument that pro-trans people will say is why we should have books about transgender things and why we should have exposure to these things, because children who are this way will therefore learn and see what's possible to them and have themselves affirmed. Same exact argument made by critics who will say, yeah, that's the problem. Taking somebody like this and exposing her to information, books, and resources that give her ideas and permission and concepts and language that she didn't have before is exactly enabling of something that's a mistake. It's empowering of a problem. You're exposing somebody to something that they shouldn't be exposed to because they're impressionable and they're vulnerable, and there's a reason why we have taboos, and there's a reason why we have it. It's sort of like, you know, if you had the argument that, you know, has been made historically about, I don't know, shows about adultery or shows about, you know, bigamy, like we've had the, you know, the polygamy kind of shows recently. You say, well, that's not great for somebody who's having trouble in their marriage to be exposed to, because it empowers and it conceptualizes. You know, like, that's the whole point, is it good or is it bad? Well, it depends if the thing itself is good or bad. And so, interestingly, that observation, I think, it helps out both narratives, just depending on how you want to hear it.
It's definitely been hard for me. Like I said in my testimony, I was severely bullied in middle school to the point where I had to drop out of public school because there was so much hate every day in the hallways, being misgendered, being deadnamed, and it got to physical violence at a certain point. And so I had to drop out of public school for that year, and the school wasn't doing anything about it.
So it's awful to imagine, first of all, the pain, psychological pain that people suffer who have to feel alienated from their bodies. Be honest about that. I think everybody should be honest about that. Even if you think it's misguided, or even if you think it's some kind of a mental disorder, the pain is real, even if the disorder is a problem, right? Okay. And also, you know, being bullied is never good. But when she says being bullied, and when she talks about adverse treatment, and when she talks about violence, part of that is when people use these terms, I'm never sure whether what they mean was I was really seriously harassed, I was really physically endangered, or whether what they mean was, well, somebody called me by the wrong pronoun, or somebody called me by the wrong name. You notice how she treats being misgendered and being deadnamed as if they are in the same category as being physically assaulted or being, you know, having their safety threatened. You know, because what people will say is, I feel unsafe in an environment where people don't use the right pronoun. Well, that's not genuine unsafety. That's just people disagreeing with what you would like them to say. Those are two very different things. And so I think you undermine your credibility for making claims about bullying and violence when you use language violations in the same category as these other things. 437-1620. I'll leave you with this one only because it was one of the more fascinating ones toward the end. Was Kelly Robinson. She's the one who engaged with Senator Kennedy. And we talked about this last week when she engaged with him over the question of, you know, are women athletes better than male athletes or whatever. And there were two interactions between her and senators I thought were fascinating. Here's the first one with Ted Cruz.
Ms. Robinson, do you agree with Ms. Gaines that there's a difference between women and men?
That's Riley Gaines, the swimmer who had to compete against Leah Thomas.
If the question is about trans women,
I'm just asking, is there a difference between women and men?
What I can say is that the NCAA has rules in place. They've had rules in place for the last decade, and when this competition happened,
I'm going to try again.
The rules were clear.
Do you believe there's a difference between women and men? It's a yes-no question. Do you believe there's a difference?
Oh, I think that we're talking about this case with the NCAA.
No, I'm asking a question. Do you believe there's a difference between women and men? Most most people could answer this very simply. I'm curious if you're willing to do so.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just putting it into the context of the conversation that we're having. I think that there are definitions related to sex.
Is that a yes? So I'm trying to get a yes or no. I'm not trying to get a speech.
Yeah, and she won't do it. She just won't do it. Oh, yeah, absolutely. But she won't actually say it. See, that undermines your credibility. If you can't acknowledge something so basic as that. Right. And this kind of came up later with John Kennedy, who was, I think, actually doing a sincere job of trying to understand her position on gender.
And how many genders are there?
I think the gender is expansive and the definitions are always growing. You know, today I can tell you,
more
I talk to young people
more
that talk about non-binary as
more than five.
I think the gender is not a binary is what I'm trying
but
to
is,
say.
But are there more than five genders? I'm just trying to understand. Are there more than five genders?
Well, I mean, I think that there was a time where women wearing pants didn't feel like it was appropriate for their gender, and yet I'm wearing pants today. I think that there are ways that we express our gender that
are
expansive.
Are there more than five?
I wouldn't subject myself to naming how many genders there are, but what I can say
is
that gender is a reflection.
Number?
Excuse me?
There's an infinite number of genders?
I think depending on your culture, there are a lot of different genders that exist.
See, you start to sound like gender as a concept has no meaning whatsoever. But when you are unwilling to answer what I think are fair questions, well, how many? I mean, is it more than five? Is it more than 100? Is it a million? How many genders are there? And what does gender actually mean if it has no meaning at all, which is what infinite genders would kind of. Anyway, just, you know, some interesting observations from that. I have a lot more to say about this, but, you know, only so much time I'm willing to devote to this one subject in any given show. 723 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
I want to put up here a picture so everybody can see it. This was the welcome you were treated to at San Francisco State University just a couple of months ago when a mob assembled where you were supposed to speak, I believe for over 3 hours, screamed, threatened you, barricaded you in a room. Do I have that basically correct?
Yes. I was held for ransom for 3.5 hours by hundreds of these protesters, as you see on the board. They demanded that I had to pay them money if I wanted to make it home to see my family safe again.
My God. Like, listening to Riley Gaines, like, I knew her story vaguely. I didn't know her story all that well, but listening to her testify in the Senate last week on these issues about, you know, male and female sports and, you know, pronouns and laws and all of this stuff. She was one of the five people who were there. The others were also very interesting. Harley Walker was a young transgender woman. You had a couple of others as well, and some of them were less interesting than others. Listening to Riley Gaines stuff was just absolutely fascinating to me because, you know, she's experienced this firsthand, right? She's the one who had to compete against Leah Thomas and got beat out for the national championship because, or tied for the national championship when she could have had it all by herself, and then forced to be in a locker room where a 6-foot-plus tall guy with guy parts is undressing in front of all the ladies, and the NCAA not only wouldn't do anything to protect them, but, you know, deliberately put them into that position because it suited the political purposes for the NCAA. Anyway, so she got asked to speak at San Francisco State University, and, I mean, completely harassed. I'm not surprised, but I am disheartened to hear her talk about what she endured going through that experience, and, you know, how dangerous it really was. And, you know, like, the hate, basically, that people were expressing to her. I mean, it was terrible.
I was invited to speak on my experience of my senior year in competing against a male. Nothing opinionated about what I shared. It was sheerly the exact lived experience of what me and my teammates and fellow competitors dealt with. And so I spoke. After my speech, there was, of course, a lot of protesters in the room, which I'm totally fine with people protesting. It's their right to protest. But what I'm not fine with is when it does turn violent in the way that it did. Because protesters afterwards, they rushed into the room, they turned off the lights, they rushed to the front. Myself and others were assaulted, and that's ultimately when I was held for hostage for 3.5 hours.
Good Lord, that's just unbelievable. So she was specifically asked, you know, by Ted Cruz about, like, the physiological differences between men and women when it comes to sports.
In your experience, is there a difference between women and men?
Of course. I think we learn this at a very young age, watching even 12 and unders play. Going through puberty causes irreversible advantage, that no matter the training, no matter the diet, no matter any alterable change you can make, will overcome that male advantage.
And not just like in the general terms, but in specific things that I had never thought about before, particularly for swimming.
Especially in sports like swimming, where lung capacity matters so much. Even something as silly as throat size, men have on average a 40% larger throat, which sounds like it's nothing. But when you're grasping for air, that 40% larger throat makes a huge difference in athletic success, not to mention height. You guys know the differences.
Height, strength, that, sure. Endurance, sure. But endurance is partly tied to lung capacity and throat capacity. I mean, things, again, that they're kind of obvious when you think about it, but I had never considered how even those little things would make a big difference in the competitive advantage of somebody with a biologically male body. And, you know, some of the other stuff that kind of came up in this conversation, like, you know, Harley Walker, again, this young transgender girl who talked about her experiences. And it's interesting because the way she talks about her experiences, I think there's a truth there, but then it's truth that can be used to favor either side of the argument, depending on how you take it. I'll play that for you in just a second. Candy's got traffic on the fives.
And good news is that accident by West Florida Hospital has been cleaned up. Still a little slow in that area, usually is, though. So use caution wherever you are. 437-1620, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Anyway, so here, thanks so much, Candy. So here was Harley Walker giving her kind of what helped her along the way as she was growing up and learning to believe that transgender was her identity and an okay thing, too.
One of the things that helped me was getting involved in my community. My parents took me to our local PFLAG, which is Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. It was a group of people who was just a roundtable of queer members of the community and allies who just came together to share their experiences and just have a good time. And I was scared going to that meeting, but as soon as I got there, I felt so welcomed. And it was the first time I did not feel alone. And so that's why I'm here today, to tell those trans kids that they are not alone, that I accept them and so many other people accept them for who they are, because it's not a choice. And that regardless of what people say to you, just remember who you are and stick to that.
So very interesting. First of all, for anybody to feel so alone and isolated in their life is an awful thing. And the question then is there a way to make them feel loved and encouraged and embraced without also affirming the thing that you think is not good for them? But of course, more often is the case where people who do think the thing is good for them, it's easier for them to affirm and encourage and accept those people, right? I mean, that's just true. And so I think one of the challenges for people, you know, like me, who are generally against a lot of this stuff, is, okay, can we be against it in a way that also makes sure to recognize that these are people who have struggles, who matter, and that we should love and care for? Right? I mean, that's a part of the conversation that doesn't get expressed very well. The other part of what she said, and this does get said all the time, and I'm going to play another clip from her that said the same thing in a little bit different way.
You know, me being called out by my state legislation and Alabama governor, who is elected to represent everybody in their state, everybody in their district, attacking those people for just simply being who they are, is disgusting.
There's a phrase that gets used a lot in this conversation, for being who you are, accept me for who I am. But the weird thing about it when you're talking about particularly trans, okay, is that's then used to justify dramatic interventions chemically and surgically to alter you into something that you most definitely are not. I mean, the whole transgender philosophy is not based on acceptance of who you are. It's based on changing you into who you think you are. Incredibly disruptive changes. And so, you know, for example, I think one of the problems we have, I've actually been communicating with somebody who's lesbian on this topic, and one of her frustrations is she thinks that a lot of people get told they're trans when they're really just gay, you know, or they, you know, kind of get told as a child that they can't be something, they can't be this way, when what they really ought to be taught is, you know, it's okay to be that way, and then also there's this other thing, but instead you got to change entirely who you are. The trans concept is not accepting of who you are. It's rejecting of who you are in an effort to become something else. And how much of that is coerced into people by the way we react to their discomfort with their gender identity or their bodily identity. Anyway, I know we didn't do future news, and I know this is a bit of a change, but I wanted you to hear some of this stuff because the hearing was tremendously interesting, and we're going to post all the segments on this topic so you can listen to it.